everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in? This is The Run Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Cho Minardi. And today we're actually on episode 3 of our series. This series that I'm absolutely loving about women that we want to wear. So all of the female designers we're really into.
I know. It's been quite a lineup for us. We have a fantastic conversation about Mrs. Prada and what makes her the woman we all want to wear.
I'm just envisioning you in her skin.
And I got to sit down with Victoria Beckham, which was a real treat, and got to ask her all about David planning out his outfits a week in advance. And one special question that she was quite upset by, but you'll have to tune in and listen to find out what that was. On today's episode, we have Vogue Runway director Nicole Phelps here to talk about today's designer. Welcome, Nicole.
Good to be here.
You spoke to Gabriella Hearst, right? I know she was at Chloe, but she also has her own brand.
Yes. I've been reviewing Gabby's shows here in New York for many years, close to a decade, I think. She's at a pivot point in her career, having spent 3 years at Chloe and turned that brand into a B Corp and really brought a lot of her sustainable principles to Paris. And now she's refocusing on her own collection. And she's a great interview. She's a very inspiring person, tireless and indefatigable. I think that's how you say that word.
It's true. You never say it.
That's
you just read it.
That's such a good description of her.
Oh my God, I remember talking to her about her schedule when she was at Chloe. I mean, she has young kids. She was traveling back and forth to Paris. I was like, this cannot be a long-term solution.
She makes it sound like she didn't mind it. You know, she didn't mind it at all. But I think I actually am sort of suspicious of like one designer doing two brands. Like I always have been. And I think it's a real opportunity for her to be refocused on just one. I'm excited to see what happens at Gabriella Hearst now.
She's so inspiring to me because of what a beacon she's been for sustainability. And honestly, from the beginning, before she really had established herself, it was always her number one priority. And to have brought that to a huge conglomerate and really left an imprint there is so admirable and impressive.
And her clothes are quite chic.
Oh, they're so chic. She, one could argue, alongside the Row, really launched quiet luxury,
yes,
if we must say the dreaded term.
Yeah. So we started out the sound check talking about shoes, and
we love to do that at the run through.
In true Gabriella Hearst style, she had a long story to tell about what she was wearing.
It's the first thing I look at people.
Shoes?
Always. Always. Mm. It tells a lot. And it's where my eye goes first.
Yeah.
Talking about shoes, and you can stop me whenever you want. It's really the one thing that is very, very hard to not have it be decade focus and to do timeless. But that's why I like both of our shoes right now. They're timeless. They could be from any period.
Why is that?
Because there's, I think shoes follow a trend. But I think I spoke to you about this before. The Vivienne Westwood Pirate boot was always an example for me because it's designed in 1976. But the last is from probably like the late 1700s. And so creating that thing that you cannot pinpoint in time is really what triggers me in design.
Can you tell people what a last is for people who don't understand shoe construction?
It's the shape of the shoe that you wear, and also you can define in the last the toe shape as well.
Do you have a pair of Vivienne Westwood's pirate boots?
Yes, I do.
Do you remember when you got them or how you got them?
Well, I believe in giving when it hurts, right? Like, if you have extra, it's easy to give. But so I used to have one pair of Vivian Westwood Pyre boots, and I gave them to my best friend. And it was the first time in my life that I was like, ay. So I went and bought a pair. So I bought it twice in my life.
But they're not that easy to find, right?
No. I have my second pair. It's probably 10 years ago.
They're sort of a grail item.
Yeah, I mean, it's you like your history of fashion. That's one to have.
So we have you in because you're at a very interesting, a pivot point in your career. Yeah. You have spent the last 3 years as creative director at Chloe. That came to an end in September. And it's a moment for you to redouble your efforts at Gabriela Hearst, at your own line, which you launched, is it 8 years ago or 9 years ago?
No, 9 years ago.
Let's start with Chloe. Though, what would you say was the best part of it and the worst part of it and what you learned?
The best part is easy to answer. It's the people. I mean, I met some incredible talent and the people I've worked with. And there's a moment, you know, team building is it's one of the, would say, for any industry, for any job, team building is the key of any success. Nobody does anything alone. And I think towards the end of the project, there was a swing, you know, when things work like a jazz band. And it's easier at Gabriela Hearst where you have a shorthand, right? Like I move an eyebrow and everybody knows exactly what I mean. And it's like, we mumble. We don't even talk to each other. We go, rah, 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 okay, got it, you know. So, but to develop that shorthand in, I would say, the team was one of the best experiences at Chloe. And that from the human level. And then from the mission level, let's put it, was the how fast. Like if I go back, it's like how fast and how relentless was the drive to put all the research and development that we have learned at Gabriela Hearst and put them at Chloe. So that we were able to pivot all our sustainable efforts so quickly, that's really something really, really proud.
Why did you want to do two brands at once? I mean, how ambitious are you?
Very. But there were good reasons. Everything I do has a thought process in the sense of it has to be not just beneficial for me. It has to be beneficial for others, and it has to multiply. The more people it benefits, the better the idea is and the project and the commitment. And Chloe was a brand that I've always loved and aesthetically was, as I say, it's like speaking Spanish and French. It's not two different routes, right? And so it was an aesthetic, and I really resonated with the founder, Gaby Agnon, and her, I don't know, a lot of people know her strong socialist principles and the way to build something for others. And it's really formidable. She was a visionary. And I wanted to learn. I'm an avid learner, and I knew that that was part of the dharma. I knew that I was going to go to Chloe before it even happened. So I just was determined.
We should give a shout out to Gabby Agnon, the founder of Chloe.
She was a badass. I mean, we have our labels now as designers in our clothes, thanks to her, because she refused to put, before it used to be for store, blah, 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 from Chloe, right? And she was like, oh, you put my label, you don't take my clothes. And she changed that. And if you even look at the first invitation that she did for her first show, I mean, that's Peter Miles kind of style. And Left Bank, and I visited her granddaughter, and I visited her son, and the way they live and the aesthetic, it really resonated to who I am and what I like as well, where it's not a lot, but precious and things that mean something. Mm-hmm. She was even recycling. People don't know this. She was repurposing before repurposing was a thing. With the leftovers of fabric, she would do her own handkerchiefs. And there's a line that I like that she said where it's all, for her, was about detail and quality. Mm-hmm. And that resonated exactly with me.
Talk about what those 3 years were like in juggling two jobs and living in two places in New York and Paris.
People think that that part was rough, and I didn't feel it because I really love what I do. I like to say this quote from Artemisia Gentileschi. Your lordship, let me tell you what a woman can do. That's a 16th from the 1600s. And I'm like, yeah, okay, it's tough, but you have no idea how much I can endure. I mean, I grew up in a ranch. I was herding cattle all my childhood. So yeah, this is nice.
You have young kids though. How did they deal with you being gone sometimes?
Well, I had the conversation with my daughters. They are teenager daughters, and they were the ones that were going to basically, you know, suffer the most. And they are such natural born feminists that they were, you have to do this, mom. You can't live without doing this. And so, and let's not forget it was a pandemic. So the whole experience is quite surreal.
You talk a lot about your daughters and learning from them. So I'm curious, what are you learning from them now? They're 15, right?
I'm learning a lot from them, and I'm learning from their friends as well. And the way they think and the way their value system, I think they're a very, very fair generation, that they're very sensitive to other people and their respect to other people. And this is not just my daughters. And I see it with their friends. But I remember when the war, just the recent one, 2 years ago, the war in Ethiopia happened, and there was this terrible article I read in National Geographic, and you know, about women and rape and how the journey of one of the women the article described. And I told my daughter, and my daughter was, mom, she's like, we have to read these articles. Because if they go through it, the minimum thing we can do is read about their suffering. And so that's the type of lesson that is quite profound. And then style. Right now, they're blowing me away with the style.
My son is your daughter's age, and he, too, has sort of discovered fashion. He's like a 30-inch waist, and he's wearing size 38 waistband jeans that he finds at the vintage store.
Vintage store shopping is the way to go. You know, people are really... don't understand this generation. That's what they do.
Well, that is a very good segue to talk about sustainability, which is something that is at the root of Gabriela Hearst. Mm-hmm. So go back to the early days of launching Gabriela Hearst. Why did you decide to make sustainability part of the mission?
It was really rooted from my origins, right? I had inherited my father's ranch in 2011 when he passed away, and I was going back and forward. You knew my other brand, Candela, that was positioned in the contemporary world, and you know, I was selling to the department stores, and the pressure to have a lower price point and lower the quality, and compared to what I was doing in the ranch, which is organic grass fed, and this is something my family has done for seven generations, and most of Uruguay is livestock that eats grass. So for me, it was something that had to be constructed in long-term view and sustainability. And sustainability, because it's what I grew up in, nothing more circular than a ranch. And you learn about quality from a utilitarian point of view, because things have to last. I mean, we are 2 hours and a half from the closest town. Mm-hmm. It's not like I need to go and grab that. So you have to measure, quantify. I mean, I remember my grandfather just like measuring how much sugar we have, how much flour we have, you know, like really inventory. It's like living in a boat in a way, because you're really in the middle of nowhere. And sustainability was really part of how I was brought up. It wasn't even the verticality of everything, of making our own soap or of using their own wool. So it was important for me to integrate it. And if we were going to do a product, which I believe really strongly, it's the drive of us today, is if we're going to do a product, it has to achieve to be better than what's out there, because there's too much already. So if I don't do something that I can justify my conscience, there's no point. I'm really happy just sketching at home.
Can you just tell us a little bit more about your childhood home?
Yes, I grew up till 5 years old with my mother and my father in a ranch close to my grandfather's, which is my mom's ranch now, and it's still off the grid. It was a very remote existence. And you leave a group of maybe 10, 12 people with the people that work in the ranch far away. So the silence at night is silence. The darkness at night is dark, but it's full of stars mm-hmm. because the southern hemisphere, you can see more stars. I mean, that's all changing with all these satellites. Thank you, Elon. And it really was that.
And this is in Uruguay.
Yeah, this is in Uruguay, South America. And it's something that for me was my normal because there was no one in my family that wasn't living like this. What it produces is imagination. It becomes your toy. I mean, I had all kind of fantasies. And you also learn how to survive and make quick decisions.
The run-through will be back in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Molly Sims.
And I'm Emisha Gormley.
We are two best friends with one common obsession.
Beauty.
And by that, we mean everything that makes you look
and feel
beautiful. We tried it all, and we've got your back. We'll be calling on all our favorite health experts, industry insiders, and friends to answer all your beauty questions. Consider us your beauty 411, and sometimes your 911.
From how to fix brassy hair,
to the pros and cons of laser facials,
and always with a cocktail in hand.
Always. So be prepared to be obsessed. Check out Lipstick on the Rim wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
So building a sustainable brand, from all the conversations we've had over the years, yeah. It starts with materials. Is that right? I mean, you're sourcing upcycled and recycled materials. I mean, how does a person go about building a sustainable fashion business?
I mean, I have to tell you, it's much easier now than 8 years ago. I mean, the evolution of recycled cashmeres, that didn't exist. You know, supply and demand, it's incredible. Like the denim we use. It's recycled cotton, and because I was very against using cotton because of the water usage and the herbicides and pesticides. And I prefer linen and other fabrications. But the first thing I would say, yeah, it's materials. And I always say, look at the past, right? Look at how we lived in civilization when it comes to fibers and fabrics And I always point the example of in Roman times, Europe was dressed with three materials, wool, leather, and linen. And when people ask me what's the most sustainable fiber, I would say merino or wool for endurance. And so, yes, the first thing you do, and that's the first thing I did at Chloe too, was like change the materials, change the galvanization process. There was all these different 10,000 different golds. I'm like, we don't need 10,000 different golds. We need one gold and one silver. So just eliminating everything that is the excess first.
How do you sort of reconcile? This is something I struggle with all the time, which is desire and the desire for newness, the desire to keep up with the way fashion changes and the sort of necessity for us all to consume less. I would like to understand from you how you deal with that on a personal level, but also on a professional level in your business.
I did an exercise 1 year of not to buy anything. Like, you know, I could buy gifts. That was like, you know, if I had a... And of course, I have a lot of clothes because of my job, right? But I don't have like a walk-in closet. I have friends that have my same shoe size and, you know, and of course saving special pieces for my daughters and my kids. But I think that I grew up with a striking mother, right? that had was a very strong female figure for me. And she didn't have a huge wardrobe. She had a small wardrobe with very specific pieces that she would make with her seamstress. And we used to, again, going to the past, we didn't have that habit of buying clothes. You would get clothes for special periods of your life. And I said it the first time we launched. I prefer one person buys a good quality sweater for us than buy 10 other not so good quality things in other places. It's like, I just think that just buy few but good.
There are few things that feel as good as a Gabriella Hearst cashmere sweater.
Thank you. I agree with that statement.
So let's talk about fashion more broadly because, you know, we at Vogue.com, we are looking at the internet and we're looking at social media and the trends move faster and faster. And it's almost, you know, a little bit ridiculous, I think, the way things are moving mm-hmm. so quickly. What do you make of the current state of fashion when you look around and you see everything that's happening?
Well, I follow my own drum, and I could wear a, you know, recycled cotton T-shirt that said, I survive street style. And, you know, like street fashion, logomaniac. I just keep to my corner and where the ideas come from and where everything is built. And I call it farmer's distrust, but anything that goes too fast, I'm always weary. Because if something goes too fast, there's only one way to come down fast. So I stay away from all of it. You know, I've seen so many trends. When Instagram came out and everybody wanted to do digital ads on Instagram, I was like, no, that's really not us. I don't really want to give money to Mark Zuckerberg. It's like, it's fine. You know, I have a very specific of what luxury feels and looks and it means being timeless.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
So what can you tell us about fall 2024, Gabriella Hearst?
You know how obsessed I am with materials and fabrics, and I think we outdid ourselves here. I've been following this route of studying women through Gabriella Hearst. And this is Leonora Carrington, a surrealist painter. For me, she's, you know, this visionary woman, this statement. She's a very private painter. And the only time she would come out and speak, this is in the 1970s, was about feminism and environment. And then when she was living in Mexico. And she, a witch, you know, could see visions and incredible life, remarkable artist. But also, I think the surrealist movement is a movement that I was been thinking that it's current to our time mm-hmm. when we don't understand so much. The surrealist movement came about with First World War, which was one of the most inhumane things that we've ever seen in a large scale that had happened. And how do you explain all these young boys and people without limbs walking in the streets. So it was a very traumatic time, and this is what the surrealism does. And I think this is a subject that is important to have right now when we are moving through these turbulent times.
You use the word witch.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit more. You've used it before.
Yeah. For me, the symbol of the witch is, and I always say, we're not scared, we're out. Is to show women in the full potential. full potential of their wits, full potential of their beauty and of their inner beauty and of their creation. And so it's really, I am a devout believer that we won't see the progress that we need to save our species if women are not in leadership position. Like it's game over. So I'm really, really focused on that. And bringing back to the past, spiritualism had its strength that was quite high during the Industrial Revolution. And as now we're being formed by two major changes, which is the digital revolution and climate crisis, I think this openness to be more aware of the things that we are not completely clear with science, right? Like, I find it funny that if 15 years ago people would say something about horoscopes, or now people are like, oh, it's Mercury retrograde, you know, like it's difficult. Or, but, you know, there is the goddess and the women divinity comes from agriculture belief system. And you can really see that that's really what provoked all the religions that we know now.
Yes, gosh, there's so many different directions we can go in, in from there. But tell me how you feel about the appointment of a fellow South American to the Moschino job, Adrian Apiolazza.
Vamos, that's the only thing. I am like, that's so exciting for me. It is really exciting because to grow up, and he's from Argentina, but this is a culture that I can relate to because we live so far away and so hungry for culture. So, and we have both, you know, we always look at the axis of culture, Europe and the U.S., right? And integrated with the energy of living so far away, it creates a very specific point of view. And all the artists, all the Latin American artists that have influenced us that people don't know about gets translated.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for him, too. He seems like a really sweet guy. What about your cultural diet? What are you reading and or watching, high or lowbrow?
I'm reading The White Goddess from Robert Grave because, again, I'm really interested in the subject of divinity. And I find it fascinating that in the empire of Rome at the time, what different cultures, let's say the Celts, if you wanted to go and dominate a culture, you had to attack their deities, their what their goddesses were who they believe in. And so they had to hide who they believed in. And so it had to be oral and secret and all this really, really complex way to really reveal who had their soul and their belief. And it's fascinating to me. And the position of women in it. It's really what I'm fascinated. And then on I wouldn't say lowbrow, but I like watching The Bear. Because I think it's important for people to learn when they see a show like that how much it takes for someone to make your sandwich, right? And I always compare because I have a friend, one of my best friends is a chef, that Daniel Hum from 11 Madison Park, how there's some similarities to what we do in the terms of ingredients and team. How important is team working? That I spend so much time in the office. The people that I love are there, and so it's you can't do anything alone. And I think that show really shows that the way we need to learn how to communicate and appreciate each other.
Well, thank you very much, Gabriela Hearst, for joining me here. It's always great to talk to you, and I learned so much.
Well, thank you so much for having, and it's always so lucky to have a conversation with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all, folks.
Bye.
The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast. The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns, with engineering from Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and James Yost. It is mixed by Mike Kutchman. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community.
That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out.
From PRX.